Dateline Washington, special year-end edition. Hello again from the nation's capital. I'm Greg Corumbus. And in this very special edition of Dateline Washington, we'll be examining the progress the United States has made over the past 12 months in the war against Islamic radicalism. We'll be joined by retired Navy Captain Chuck Nash, who's also a Fox News military analyst, and get his thoughts on the impact the surge continues to have on the security improvements in Iraq. We'll also get his thoughts on the political progress we're seeing or not seeing there. And we'll get his insights on the latest developments with respect to Iran, Afghanistan, the Mumbai terrorist attacks, and more. And in the second half hour of this special program, we'll do what we do at this time every year. Remember the very famous names and faces in politics, entertainment, the media, music, and in all walks of life who left us in 2008. From folks who made a difference here in Washington to those who made us laugh, cry, and think, we will remember them one more time. This special hour of Dateline Washington begins with our extensive conversation with retired Navy Captain Chuck Nash about the war on terror, and that begins right now. My first guest in this special year-end edition of Dateline Washington is Chuck Nash, a retired U.S. Navy captain. He's also a Fox News military analyst. We want to get his thoughts on the important events in 2008, as it relates to the war against Islamic radicalism and the fronts in Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan, Mumbai, and elsewhere. And Captain, it's always a great pleasure to have you with us. Happy New Year to you.
Well, Greg, thank you. Same to you.
Well, let's start in Iraq. That was obviously a much bigger issue in terms of media coverage at the beginning of the year. The surge had already been installed. It was already showing dividends when 2008 began. By the middle to end of 2008, there was almost no media coverage of Iraq at all, other than the political elements that were going on. That's usually a sign that things are pretty stable security-wise. What's your sense of how far the security operations advanced in the past year, and what's responsible for that?
Well, I think now, Greg, that even the harshest skeptics have to acknowledge that we have won the military battle in Iraq. If you look at the casualty figures, which is what people use to determine whether we were doing well or not in the past, those figures have plummeted to the point where in October and November, there were 13 and 16 casualties. In December, up through mid-December, there were around two. If you look at that, we've never had casualty figures that low. And the surge was responsible for an almost immediate 50% reduction in casualties. So that is clear. The surge worked, and it worked because it got the troops out in the neighborhoods defending the people, whether the sun was up or the sun was down. That led to a robust build-out of the indigenous Iraqi security forces. We had been training these people all along, but without that backup and that catalyst of getting the people behind you and letting the people see that the bad guys offered no future, your own people and the Americans offered a future. And I think that shift, along with the enabling capability that the surge brought, and, quite frankly, Al-Qaeda in Iraq shooting itself in the foot by so abusing the population, all of those things combined, but it was the catalyst and the strength that the surge brought that allowed this to take root.
Captain, of course, late in the year on the political and diplomatic front, we had the Status of Forces Agreement, which was bandied about and ultimately approved. It shows that U.S. troops will be out of Iraq for the most part by the end of 2011. That's a little bit longer than the incoming president-elect Obama had suggested, but for the most part, it seems like everybody's on the same page. What do we need to see in the next couple of years to make sure that what we've worked so hard to achieve in the through the blood, sweat, and effort of our men and women in uniform will actually stand?
One of the things that we need to do, and I think President-elect Obama is looking at this very seriously, and that is not snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. I think he realizes now there's a difference between campaign rhetoric and what one does when wearing the mantle of President of the United States. He has, since the campaign, talked about getting all combat troops out. Now, that does not mean getting troops that are doing training, providing logistics for the Iraqi forces. He's left himself some wiggle room there to make sure that what we do is that we leave the Iraqi forces in a strong enough position to where if the neighbors or stateless groups want to try to come back and upset the apple cart, that they will be prepared to deal with those people and squash them like a bug. So that's the key. The key is not to get all happy and backslapping, but to do a measured withdrawal and test the waters as we go. And the SOFA agreement does that because it has all U.S. troops out of direct contact with civilians in the neighborhoods by putting them on major installations by June of 09, and then, as you say, out of Iraq by 31 December of 11. So it is a measured withdrawal, and then it's open to where the government of Iraq could request U.S. assistance beyond those dates. Those are just out there, as was referred to earlier, as a time horizon.
We're talking with retired Navy Captain Chuck Nash, who's also a Fox News military analyst. And Captain, Obama has said for a while now that he wants to take some of the troops currently serving in Iraq, as well as other troops stateside, I would imagine, and send them to Afghanistan, beef up our forces there. There isn't a ton of daily updates from Afghanistan. How would you describe the status of the fight right now and the challenges that we'll be focused on for most of 2009?
There are significant challenges in Afghanistan, and they're actually larger than some of the challenges that we faced in Iraq. They're different. One of them is just the topography. If you look at the country of Afghanistan itself, it is landlocked. It is extremely mountainous, very diverse from mountaintops above where you can hardly breathe all the way down to deserts. And it's never been ruled effectively as a single central country. It's always been very, very tribal. Warlords have ruled it. So from that standpoint, at least in Iraq, you had more of a secular society that was somewhat up to speed with technology and centralized government. In Afghanistan, those are relatively remote things. So you've got every province and every area has its warlord, and the central government is in Kabul, and there are many people who rightly point out all of the corruption that are in the central government. So,
Captain, in terms of the strategy then, it's been said that a surge-type strategy would be helpful there, but it wouldn't look the same, as you mentioned, because of all the different variables going on. So given the challenges you've laid out so well, what's the best way to proceed?
Well, I think one of the things that we need to do is, you're absolutely right, the surge, we could use more people there, but not doing the same things that they were doing in Iraq to achieve the same result. In other words, we want the same result, which is the civilian population supporting the central government in Kabul and seeing that the central government in Kabul has their best interests at heart and that their future is not tying in with the Taliban, but rather having a more civil society based on the rule of law. That is what we want. Now, what we did in Iraq is going to be different than what those troops will be doing in Afghanistan. In Afghanistan, they just went through a very bad drought. People are going hungry. The Taliban are burning down the schools. They're throwing acid in the faces of little girls going to school, because they don't believe little girls should go to school. This is different than what was happening where you needed to provide security at the neighborhood level in Iraq. Now you're out in the countryside, in the villages. And what has to happen there is the village elders, different structure but sounds very familiar to Iraq, you've got the village elders who have to understand that if you come in and can help them with their agricultural problem, help them help their village feed their people. That's number one. We're just talking about putting food in your stomach. That's a big deal. Having access to fresh water is a big deal. If we can start to improve the lives of those people while providing that perimeter security and then build that up, that is what we're looking for. It sounds very similar to Iraq, but one is a more urban society and the other is a far more rural society.
couple minutes left before we have to take a break here, Captain. And, of course, we've talked about Iraq and Afghanistan. There are some neighbors of those countries that have given us fits over the past few years and will continue to as the new administration comes in. Let's start with Iran, which we know has been supplying those who have been trying to destabilize Iraq, weapons, money, fighters themselves. And, of course, there's an ongoing nuclear weapons program there, although they deny that. They say it's only for civilian purposes. As you scan 2008, how effective have we been in reducing the influence of Iran inside Iraq and in trying to thwart their nuclear ambitions?
I think we have been very successful in reducing the Iranian military threat inside of Iraq, at least the visible outcroppings of it. Now, they may be laying low, just, you know, biding time, but the incidences of the explosively formed IEDs and other things, those have dropped dramatically, as have the casualties. I think the Iranians see that if they continue to try to thwart the central government in Baghdad, that really what they're doing is they're just setting themselves up to once again be at each other's throats as enemies when the Americans leave. So now that the SOFA agreement has been announced, the Iranians really, all they can do is harm their own cause at this point by continuing to overtly meddle. Now, they tried to tube that whole SOFA deal, and they were threatening, intimidating, and bribing to try to get the Iraqi leadership at various levels to thwart that, all the way down to the point where Muqtadir al-Sadr's people staged a protest in the parliament. So the Iranians have been very, very involved in that, not helpful at all. In fact, the Iranian regime is responsible for killing if you look at the IED deaths, I would say over 1,000 Americans. And I'm pulling that number out. But they are directly responsible for the deaths of Americans, period.
Captain, let's pause right there. When we come back, we'll talk about the Iranian nuclear program and our efforts to bring it to a halt. We'll also talk about the recent terrorist attacks in Mumbai and the role that the Pakistani government may have in trying to bring those to a much lower number. We'll be right back. This is the special year-end edition of Dateline Washington.